Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Today comes from John chapter 6, verses 56 through 71. Let me list them here. Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, I live because of the Father. So whoever eats me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like that which your ancestors ate, and they died. But the one who eats this bread will live forever. He said these things while he was teaching in the synagogue at Capernaum. When many of his disciples heard it, they said, "This teaching is difficult. Who can accept it?" But Jesus, being aware that his disciples were complaining about it, said to them, "Does this offend you? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh is useless. The words that I have spoken to you are spirit and life. But among you there are some who do not believe. For Jesus knew from the first who were the ones that did not believe and who was the one that would betray him. And he said, "For this reason I have told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted by the Father." Because of this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer went along with him. So Jesus asked the 12, "Do you also wish to go away?" Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom can we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God." Jesus answered them, "Did I not choose you, the 12? Yet one of you is a devil." He was speaking of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, for he, the one of the 12, was going to betray him.
Just a closer walk with me.
I received an email from one of the retired pastors in our community, and it was something that was sharing a story that some of you may be really familiar with, but I confess I had not seen this movie nor read the 2009 memoir of Buzz Aldrin, so it was new to me. And it's the story of Buzz Aldrin arriving on the Apollo 11 with Neil Armstrong for the very first time at the moon. And in his 2009 memoir, he writes that landing on the moon, shockingly, is not quite the same as arriving at your grandmother's house for Thanksgiving dinner. You don't just hop out and say, "We're here, we're here." it actually takes an incredible amount of time and planning once you're there to get out of the lunar module. And so they had built in several extra hours when they arrived there on the moon. Their schedule, they were supposed to eat a meal and then rest for a while. They were supposed to sleep for 7 hours. And he says that it was hard to rest, as you can maybe begin to fathom, with all of that adrenaline pumping through their system. They were supposed to rest. They couldn't do it. So in those first few hours on the moon, he did something that he had planned out without NASA knowing, but with his Presbyterian pastor back in Houston. And what he did was he pulled out from what's called his personal preference kit. He pulled out the communion elements and then a 3x5 card on which he had handwritten, you see it right there, he had written these words from Jesus: "I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever remains in me and I in them will bear much fruit, for you can do nothing without me." He says that he then poured a thimble full of wine out of a sealed plastic container, and then he had to wait for a moment for it to settle on 1/6 Earth's gravity there on the moon. And then he made this inclusive invitation to the world that was listening: "I'd like to request a few moments of silence and to invite each person listening, wherever and whomever they may be, to pause for a moment and to contemplate the events of these past few hours and to give thanks in her or his own way." And then he silently read those words that he had inscribed on that little 3x5 card. And then he took a piece of that bread and that cup, and he gave thanks, offering what he describes as a private prayer for the task at hand and the opportunity that they'd been given. He was almost 240,000 miles away from his home Presbyterian church in Houston. And I would say that through the sharing of that bread and cup, through communion or common union, they were absolutely in it together. Him and God, and him and his community at home. And through that cosmic silence, I would venture to say all of creation, in communion, common union together. It's kind of amazing just to see that image. And as I do, I'm reminded, if only my life felt that centered a little more often right back here on Earth. But I have to acknowledge that that's not always the case for me. Even coming off of a week of vacation where Sarah and Eleanor and I got to go back together to the Midwest, and we got to stay on this little cabin on a phenomenal little lake in upper Minnesota. We gathered in that space celebrating my mom's retirement. She has spent her life as a special ed teacher and administrator, and so we were going back to give thanks for her time together with family. And then I came back from that, and I had all of one day here before I got to go with Pastor Linda and 500 other pastors down to San Diego, where I hadn't really been. So if you haven't been, the temperature varies. It's really tough, between like 71 and 73. There might have been a cloud at like one moment, and the beach, or there's play air. I mean, it was all of that. And then I came back, and I wasn't even back here for 48 hours before I found my blood pressure past the point of rising and boiling, okay? So first, this is what was happening. Sarah had stopped by this place called the Real Pie Company on Broadway. If you haven't been, oh, you should go. So we're out on our front porch. It's fabulous. It's a beautiful evening. We're sharing this peach and wild berry, local berry pie. The crust is like phenomenal. Like, I cannot tell you how good this is. And I regrettably looked at my phone, and I looked at my email. And in like a moment like that, I went from being in this sacred, divine experience, tasting that crust and breaking bread with family, to I don't even remember going from our front yard to our backyard. I don't remember dialing the phone, but somehow those things happened. And the next thing I know, I'm in the backyard and I'm having what I'll call now a conversation. The theme in Minnesota is Minnesota nice. I was not even like sorta nice. That was not where this was going. The email that had come through was from the professional who helped us disassemble the organ, the pipe organ that was up there. He has been working. He's been trying to work with a church in Kansas City, and that church in Kansas City, my hometown, was supposed to become the new home for our pipe organ. And they've gone radio silent, like, hello, Houston, and then you get nothing, as they just don't respond. So then he found another person, and I'm going to stop telling the story because that's not actually the part that's important, what I was having this conversation out in the back. But I was really frustrated, like, ready for that pipe organ to go to the dump. We're done with this. We're not going to go any further in this. And I'm tense. I'm frustrated. I come through the back door, and our daughter, Eleanor, meets me, and she says, Daddy, we need to have a peace moment. And I didn't know what a peace moment was, and I was a little anxious. And she took my hand, and she walked me through our little dining room and into her room, and she sat me down on her rug. And Sarah joined us. And then our daughter, Eleanor, who's 8, she said, you need to close your eyes. So she taught us how to sit. She had us close our eyes. And then she said, we're going to listen to our breathing. We're going to use our ears to listen to our breathing. And she must have been able to tell that I was not ready to listen with my ears to my breathing, because she said, Daddy, we need to put our hands on our stomachs. And when we're not listening to our breathing, we need to push on our stomach and remember our anchor. And I was feeling all kinds of mixed up emotions, honestly. I was feeling embarrassed that my 8-year-old needed to like calm me down from walking over a cliff about a pipe organ. There was a part of that that was going on. I was also still frustrated. I was also still frustrated about this email and this stuff. And I am not among our pastoral team. I'm not the one who sits quietly with my hand on my stomach doing the, like, touchy-feely thing, correct? Amen. Linda is at the playa. I am not. So she stayed with me, though, and she said, just keep pushing on your stomach and remember your anchor. And so we stayed there. And after a few moments, I started to feel a little bit more grounded here on earth. I started to feel a little bit more rooted in the grace that we talk about here at the table all the time. I started to feel a little more connected to, or in union with, the very people that I had just been eating that exquisite pie with. The pie hadn't really left, but I had turned away from it. I had gone away from that table, and I found myself through that process, as Eleanor invited us back, recentered, mindful, peaceful, abiding, you might say in communion with God and the people that I was around. The readings over the last 5 weeks that are assigned to the global church all move through the 6th chapter of the Gospel of John. This is a long chapter. You heard Mallory share this morning the end of the chapter, all the way to verse 71. This chapter begins with Jesus feeding the 5,000 folks that are hungry. And then the rest of the chapter moves through Jesus reflecting on what that means. And so it moves from the beginning, the hope of hungry people being fed, carbs from heaven, as we're calling our worship series, to the end where everybody's like, this is hard. This doesn't, I'm out. That's where the chapter moves from. We're in this together. It's a beautiful moment. We're on the front porch eating real pie company pie, and then we're in the back yelling at somebody on the phone, right? That's the movement of John chapter 6. Fred Craddock, who's a preacher to preachers, he writes about it like this. Jesus gave the hungry bread, and they certainly were delirious with delight. They expected the Messiah to do such things. But then Jesus basically says, you can't live on bread alone. but by every word that comes from my mouth, the mouth of the Lord. Some who'd been excited begin to drift away, and then Jesus ratchets the stakes up further by explaining, the bread I give for the life of the world is my body. And so by the time Jesus gets to that moment, they're mostly in the backyard done with this. This chapter is the clearest reference that we have in the whole Gospel of John to what the church calls Eucharist or Holy Communion. For John, Jesus' identity comes because God has sent Jesus into the world. So Jesus is the bread of life, the bread sent by God into the world. This whole chapter, John 6, is an echo or a midrash, an echo on Exodus 16. So Exodus 16 is the story we move through in Exodus, the story of Moses leading the people of God from enslavement to freedom. They get out of enslavement, they are free, and they're in what's called the wilderness. They're not yet in the promised land. And in that in-between space, God gives them manna, or enough sustenance to sustain them for that day. So Jesus is not saying, my flesh and body is the bread of life, because he's like, there's nothing about this is really new. He's echoing what the people of God, the salvation story, has always been. God saved the people by giving them manna or bread in the wilderness. And Jesus is saying, that's what's happening again. But now the bread is in me. God has sent me to share that. And we see this in different ways in the different Gospels, okay? So we see or reflect on communion in different ways. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, those three Gospels, communion, Eucharist, is tied to Jesus' death. The Last Supper. Jesus gathers people around. We're going to share about that in a little bit right here. Jesus gathers them around. That doesn't happen in the Gospel of John. In the Gospel of John, Jesus doesn't have a Last Supper. He just washes their he washes their feet and says, now go do this to others. So the Gospel of John has a different version. So this is the moment in the Gospel of John when Jesus is reflecting on what communion means. And instead of rooting it like Mark, Matthew, and Luke in death, Jesus is rooting it in life. Like, I am the bread of life. The flesh finds its meaning in the Spirit. Alive, creation comes alive through the Spirit out in the world. So it's a different focus, and it gets a little bit strange here in the sixth chapter. Mallory read this at the beginning. Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. I believe when we hear that through the lens of Exodus 16, through the lens that the people of God knew out in the wilderness, we start to see that Jesus is saying his body, the word made flesh, is the manna. This is what carbs from heaven looks like. And in the Christian church, what we call that is incarnation. Incarnation. God coming into the world at Christmas through a small, vulnerable child born to an unwed teen girl out in the middle of nowhere who was herself an immigrant, and then she becomes a refugee. That's where God comes into the world. But the focus is on God coming into the world. And then the Spirit, through that, means that all of the world then is infused with the Spirit of God. So instead of looking on and seeing just a body with someone around us, or looking in a mirror and seeing just a body, what we're called through the Christian tradition to see is the Spirit of God in each and every body, including our own, around us. That's what communion looks like. Communion and incarnation become mirrors of each other, so that through the breaking of the bread and the sharing of cup, we see God infused in the material world, and then we take that out into the world to see God infused in each and every body around us. Common union, communion. But by the 60th verse of this chapter, it's really, really clear in the Gospel of John that this is hard. Most of the disciples are saying, no, that's too much. I am not going to follow in that way. I'm going to leave the table. I'm going to turn away from that invitation. And then by the 63rd verse, we get John reflecting again, reminding us that the way to understand Jesus as bread is by holding it together with God becoming incarnate in Jesus. We have to see these things together to understand the fullness of this mystery. See, too often, we see the body as flesh instead of flesh infused with spirit. And when we do that, we miss incarnation. I think I went from the front porch seeing the spirit in both the breaking of the bread and the people there, to the back, not seeing the spirit in anything. Nothing had changed but my movement and how open I was to what was happening all around me. Too often we miss that spirit or that incarnational way of God in us and among us. One theologian that I read this week shares about it like this. We eat up the world without appreciating how God has infused creation with the spirit. Thus, we use and we discard it in a crude and materialist way. She says, the ethical imperative at the heart of John's incarnational theology of the Eucharist is clear. Will we treat the world around us as incarnational, the pie on the front porch, or simply as material, yelling into an inanimate object about another inanimate object and how frustrated that has made me? Which of those ways are we going to choose to see the world around us? To do the former, to stay on where I was, that front porch, she writes, requires faith. Keeping the flesh together with the spirit requires us to live deeply, appreciating our interdependence and our interconnectedness. Walking away, though, from that relationship, that's what betrayal looks like in John's gospel. And we all have that capacity. Many of the disciples in John 6 walk away. Or to stay in that metaphor, they walk from the front porch to the back porch. Now, dominant expressions of Christianity tend to have us think with this way. You either have faith or you have doubt. They're seen as opposites, right? We sang as we came in this morning, Lord, I find you in the seeking. Lord, I find you in the doubt. We do that because unlike dominant expressions of Christianity, the gospel witness does not hold faith and doubt as opposites. In John's gospel, faith is staying with Jesus in communion, common union with Jesus. And in John's gospel, doubt, what we tend to think of as doubt, is actually betrayal. And the way you betray Jesus is you walk away from that. You walk from the front yard to the backyard. You refuse to see the spirit in Jesus, in yourself, in the people around you. That's what betrayal looks like. That's John's gospel version. It's why at the end of John's gospel, we're focused on washing feet, right? Instead of Judas never betrays in that same way. This is the invitation in the gospel of John. It offers an alternative. It longs for the readers to be drawn into a deeper relationship with Jesus, to abide or remain with Jesus incarnationally. We do that just like Eleanor was teaching me. When we put our hand on our stomach, we find our anchor, we remember the spirit that's in our bodies, and then through that, the spirit that is in every body. And the word in the New Testament for that is meno. It means abide or remain. And so our daughter was teaching us how to remember, how to abide with Jesus in that moment. And I don't know what works for you, but I know we all need to come back to that this day. And if you're like me, over and over and over and over and over again. Richard Rohr and the early desert mothers and fathers, they remind us that God is triune, creator, redeemer, sustainer. And in that community, we're invited to see the way that we're called to live. We're invited into that divine dance, into that community, to see the Spirit alive in everything. John's gospel offers a critical corrective to this notion, this popular notion in Christianity that asserts that faith is about narrowly believing prescribed notions. And instead, it says faith is about abiding in relationship with Jesus and all of creation as though the Spirit is really in it. That's where the Gospel of John is taking us, inviting us. And here in this moment, we see everyone in the community, this metaphor of eating and drinking, abiding, maintaining relationship, breaking bread, by sharing carbs from heaven. And we witness in this chapter that most people walk away, turn from those carbs. That's what I was doing when I looked at the phone and allowed it to like take me away. Because I think the truth is, the risk of being in that vulnerable place with those that we say we want to love the most can often feel like too much. And so it's not a coincidence that I look at my phone. It's a protective mechanism. And I don't know what yours is, but I know we all have them. And then to abide, we have to come back to that anchor place, as our daughter named it, to the truth of God's Spirit alive in the flesh of those around us and even in ourselves. And I suspect that that's in part why John 6 is so compelling, because it's so true. There are moments where we, like a few of the disciples, abide with God in that. And then there are a lot of moments where we betray that and we walk away. And our invitation this morning is to remember our capacity to come back to that bread of life, to trust that we're always invited back to the feast that is God's. And sometimes that invitation comes with the hand of an 8-year-old who leads us back home. And when she does, she takes us to what I think looks a lot like the green pasture that Jesus led the disciples to, and then the people, the 5,000 that he fed. That pasture can look a lot like the rug in her little bedroom. And then she, like the good shepherd who called the people to do what? To sit down. And then I imagine that she, like the good shepherd, does that same thing, like breathe in and breathe out and close your eyes. And as you remember your anchor, you find your anchor, you come back to that mindfulness, that peacefulness, the abiding. And in it, you have the opportunity to taste communion. And the miracle of feeding 5,000 can happen in our own apartments, in our own homes. It's something like the beauty of communion that's shared in Houston and on the moon. That cosmic silence of union can take shape in our own everyday lives. And the truth is, it's always taking shape in our everyday lives. Can we find our way from that back porch to the front and to taste the beauty of that pie that I had just walked away from? And so I want to invite you to hear these words in a poem by Mary Oliver as an invitation for all of us today to abide with the one who came that we might know life and know it abundantly. Why worry about the loaves and fishes? If you say the right words, the wine expands. If you say them with love and the felt ferocity of that love and the felt necessity of that love, the fish explode into many. Imagine him speaking, and don't worry about what is reality or what is plain or what is mysterious. If you were there, it was all those things. If you can imagine it, it is all those things. Eat, drink, be happy. Accept the miracle. Accept, too, each spoken word, spoken with love. Amen.
Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's faint shadows flee. In life and death, Lord, abide.